The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and today, rap. That's right, today, one of the biggest selling rappers of all time, one of the founding members of the Wu-Tang Clan, Method Man, is here. He's also host of the upcoming TV show Drop the Mic on TBS, James Corden production. That's where I met him. We met at the show, hit it off, and then I went out to his house in Staten Island, New York City, and we had a great conversation talking about Wu-Tang's early days, Tupac's murder, Biggie's murder, the whole East Coast versus West Coast rap rivalry that some say cost both Tupac and Biggie their lives. Method Man also had a pretty big role in the Marvel Netflix series Luke Cage. He's a hell of an actor. You hear the crazy story that resulted in that opportunity. He's also a huge wrestling fan since childhood. He's got favorite wrestlers, favorite matches, favorite performers, favorite Y2J moments. But before we get to Method Man, I'm doing a couple spoken word shows in Ireland. We've talked about it. They're the words of Jericho. Listen in, man. The June 7th date in Belfast has already sold out VIP and general admission, but there's still a couple of general admission tickets left to the June 8th show in Dublin. You can get those at ticketmaster.ie. Come on down. We're going to have a great time just hanging out and shooting the breeze, telling stories, answering questions, tap dancing, whatever it is I can think of. And, of course, the Fozzy Judas Rising Tour kicks off May 5th in Virginia Beach, Virginia at the Lunatic Luau. King and Sons of Texas will be supporting us for most of the run. You can get tickets to all the shows and buy VIP meet and greets at FozzyRock.com. You're not going to want to miss the VIP meet and greets. We do a private concert for y'all. Take pictures. Lots of great stuff. Plus, Zara Schreiber is actually our VIP merch person from NXT fame. She came from that background, and she's going to start with Fozzy this tour. We're excited to have her as well. So if you're an NXT fan, you can come check her out. And also see the new Judas video for the new song by Fozzy, Judas, debuting May 2nd on loudwire.com at 10 a.m. Check out the teaser on my Instagram, and I will probably play Judas. Let's see, May 2nd is a Tuesday, so let's say we'll play it May 3rd. We'll debut Judas by Fozzy next week right here on Talk is Jericho on May 3rd, and it will all come together because when we're playing Judas on the Judas Rising Tour, you see, that's why we called it that. May 6th at the Revival in Canton. May 7th, Carolina Rebellion in Charlotte. May 9th, the Concourse in Knoxville. May 10th, Trixie's in Louisville. 11th, the Rave in Milwaukee. 12th, Green Bay Distillery in Green Bay. 14th is Northern Invasion in Somerset, Wisconsin. 16th, the Diesel Club Lounge in Pittsburgh. 17th, Chameleon Club in Lancaster. 18th is 89 North in Padgog, New York. 19th, House of Independence, Asbury Park, New Jersey. 20th, Blue Fox at Winchester. 21, Main Stage in Morgantown, West Virginia. 23, Machine Shop in Flint. 24, The Forge in Joliet. The 5th, Fubar, St. Louis. 26, Rocklahoma in Pryor, Oklahoma. 27, River City Rockfest in San Antone. And the 28th is in Dallas at the Starplex Auditorium, BFD. We are so excited to be seeing you guys. Once again, FozzyRock.com for all tickets and VIP information. We're also headed to Europe to do the Download Festival on June 11th, main stage with Aerosmith. We're excited. Also hosting the Metal Hammer Golden God Awards on June 12th at the O2 Arena in London. On the 13th, or at the Crawford Arms in Milton Keynes. That show's almost sold out. There's also going to be a not-so-secret Fozzy gig on the 14th in England. Keep your eyes and ears open for that. Keep checking FozzyRock.com for all information, all VIP meet and greets. Come check us out and rock with us. Judas debuting right here. Talk is Jericho on May 3rd. Okay. All right. Method Man is coming up.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, so here with Method Man,
yes, sir.
And it's a family circus. The family's all around. Everyone's getting organized, getting ready.
Hell yeah!
And I always love it's like, you know, like one of the biggest stars in rap history, and you come here and it's just like father knows best. You know what I mean?
Damn right.
It's cool seeing the other side of the coin.
Same thing with you guys. You know what I'm saying? We see the persona that you guys portray on TV, but when you're at home with your kids, whole different thing.
It's a different thing, exactly.
Yeah.
So this is really cool because we had a chance to. Meet up, just kind of cross paths for the show Drop the Mic, which you're the host of.
Hell yeah.
Which was fun.
Yeah, it was. I thought that at the end of the day, the crowd were going to pick the female regardless to who they were battling. And since then, all the girls that have battled dudes have won, whether they were good or not.
Real talk. I learned the number one rule is don't ever go head-to-head with an Ali in anything.
There you go.
You can't compete with Ali.
Not with that legacy.
Not with that legacy.
Oh, my God. It's in cement right now. Real.
But it was a fun show. It was kind of like a battle rap thing. Like I battle rapped Layla Ali, and it was kind of a cool idea.
It was, you know, and at the end of the day, it's all in fun, and that's what we're trying to have the celebs experience, that you know, take them out of their comfort zone, not a lot, just a little bit, but to make them have fun at the end of the day.
Right.
We got a great audience, man, and I think that, we got a hit here.
Who did good? I only saw the dudes,
man.
from Big Bang Theory, and then, of course, me and Layla, but who else was on that did a good showing?
I say the Usher and Anthony Anderson battle.
Ooh, Usher did it?
Usher and Anthony Anderson.
Oh, wow. But Usher's kind of I guess he's not a rapper, he's more of a singer, right?
More of a singer, but you know what? Him and Anthony had a good battle.
Okay.
You know, and it was exactly what you would expect it. On the ad-lib stuff, Anthony would get him.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the sex appeal and the stand in the pocket with the rhyme, Usher got him on that. So we knew at the end of the day, if we left it up to the fans, or, I mean the audience, to judge, which we always do, they were going to pick Usher.
Right.
I mean, sex symbol, whatever. And he edged him out. But the guy that stood out most to me was he plays on Fresh Off the Boat. I'm so mad I can't remember his name.
Like the Korean guy?
Russell Park.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. Wrote his own rhyme.
Really?
And murdered. He battled James Van Der Beek. And that wasn't an easy task because James was on his A game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But... yeah, I was impressed. I was very impressed.
You just said something interesting talking about rapping, and obviously, like I said, you're one of the greatest. Being in the pocket.
Yes.
I think that's something like being a singer as well. I understand that, but a lot of people wouldn't. Explain what that means to be a great rapper.
When you're in the pocket, you're not only in the beat, you're riding the shit out that motherfucker. And it's like the words and the cadence that you're using fit perfect with the beat. You're always on that 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 4 1. That's being in the pocket. When you can stay in that 1 2 3 4 groove and still get everything out that you want to say, and it's melodic, you're good.
That's the secret, right?
Yes.
Is this something that, how did you learn how to do that? Did you just have it as a kid, or
what, I grew up in a musical household, and from Funkadelic to Earth, Wind & Fire to Sugar Hill Gang, it was always music around me, to the point when I was little I would sing myself to sleep with different commercial jingles or Sesame Street songs or Electric Company songs that I love.
1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8 9 10 11 12.
Oh God. You right there with me. And you know, eventually when I moved to Staten Island, because before that I lived in Long Island, and you know, Nassau Coliseum was big for WWE.
Yeah. We actually have a show there tonight.
That was when, I'm talking back when it was WWF. And Vince was doing what, you know, Coach and those guys do now.
Right.
And well, Coach isn't there anymore.
You're talking about doing the commentating.
Commentating, yes, sir. And he would do the interviews like Mean Gene did. And the first match that I had ever seen, I think I was like 7 or 8 years old, and we had to tune in to Channel 47, which was a Spanish channel, on UHF, not VHF. For all you kids out there, yes, we used to have two different knobs on the TVs. One was VHF for all the regular channels, then it was UHF for anything past 12.
Yeah, so it was kind of like the local broadcasting, public broadcasting channel.
Exactly, yeah. And it was a match between Bruno Sammartino and Larry Zbyszko. And he hit him in the head with a chair. And I remember one of the, because we were living in a shelter then, and one of the kids that stayed in the shelter with me, his teacher was a photographer that went to a lot of those events. And sure enough, when Bruno looked up and he was leaking, you seen the teacher come in and take a picture. I knew it was him because he had long hair and a big bald spot in the middle. So we knew it was him. And it was just surreal for me at that moment. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe he hit him in the head. Look at all the blood. And I was hooked. Hooked. And I remember I was a big fan of Rene Goulet because I always rooted for the underdog. And Rene, I mean, in my opinion, he was a jobber. But he was a good jobber. And anyone he was in the ring with, he made look better. In my opinion. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm going away.
That's all right, man. Yeah, that's right. So you grew up kind of at the Nassau Coliseum watching the WWE shows.
Yes, sir. I never made it to a show, but I would always watch. I remember when they switched it to Saturdays, and, you know, it would come on, and we would have these cage matches because we had bunk beds, so we would take the top bunk off and have cage matches and be in there brutalizing each other, man. And this was when Snuka started to have his run, and he was getting big and big and jumping off the top rope, and I tried that and broke the whole bed coming down. Boom! But it was still fun. It was still fun.
So you said you were living in a shelter. Is it kind of like a...
Yes, it was a trying time in my mother's life for us, and we were young, and she needed a fresh start. And we wound up in this shelter in Brooklyn for battered women. It's nothing to hide. You know, she's not, you know, hiding from her past. And honestly, the family structure in there was so good that I fully understood at an early age what they meant by it takes a village. Because it was nothing but women in there. You know, all of them had their stories or whatever of why they were there. But in the end, they were all about the kids. Basically trying to give us a normal life in an abnormal situation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And those guys that lived there were the first ones that put me on to wrestling. Wayne, Ronnie, and Sean. Sean was the youngest brother, but Wayne and Ronnie were the older brothers. And you could only stay there but so long before you had to move on. And so separation anxiety was big for me back then because all my friends would leave eventually.
Oh,
so we eventually
right.
left and landed here in Staten Island. So, I mean, you know, the journey was long. I wouldn't change anything about it. But it's funny how fate is, because if I would have never went there, I probably would not have been as big of a wrestling fan as I am today. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And also the kind of that upbringing, did that give you kind of the drive when you first started out rapping? Because there's a little bit of, I don't know if it's anger, but you got... Yeah. You had some drive there.
You're right on it. You're right on it. I mean, when you're living in a situation every day where it's like ignorance is bliss, for one, because we were broke, yes, but everyone else around us was broke too. So the kids didn't really realize how broke we were until we went outside of our environment. Then we saw how other people were living and saw the grass being greener over there, which isn't always the case. And it was like, okay, we want more for ourselves. But in the same sense, we want to stay ourselves. And hip-hop was the best venue for that. I mean, I couldn't play basketball. I mean, I could play football and things like that, but sports wasn't in my future. And that's a big escape for a lot of young black youths nowadays. You know, they either do the sports, they do the music, or some form of entertainment. What we really need is more science, more scientists, more technicians, more engineers. You know what I mean? But I would never knock anybody for taking a negative situation and turning it into a positive. Sure. Always.
But when you're living kind of on the streets, that is more attuned to sports and the rap music, that sort of thing. It's hard to want to be a scientist if you're, you know, living in a shelter, for example.
This is true. This is definitely true. But I'll tell you one thing. There was a teacher that I had in Long Island, and her name was Miss Gold, and she always encouraged us because we would read comic books, and usually in school that's a no-no. So what she did to combat that, she would have a comic book club at the end of the day, and all of us would sit around and make our own comic books. That lady there, those are the kind of teachers we need. And I mean, yo, thank you, Miss Gold, because my comic book addiction is still the same. I have over 25,000 books in that garage right there.
So before we talk about that, what kind of comics did you make? Because I used to make my own comics too.
My first comic book character, I wanted to be different from everybody else, so I named him Ulysses.
Ulysses?
Yeah, like Ulysses S. Grant, but his name was just Ulysses. And
was he a superhero?
Yeah, he was a superhero. No plot to it, but he was more of a Batman kind of, no superpowers, but he just whooped ass.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Basically that. Basic shit.
I used to do that. I would make, my biggest one was I had, for some reason, it was called the Mr. Rogers Band, and they would go have adventures like the Beatles, like Hard Day's Night type thing.
Oh, yeah.
Rogers was the Jim Rogers was the lead singer.
Nice.
And they had like a big band like Wu-Tang. There was like eight guys in the band and they would go have adventures.
And we're just boys living out our childhood fantasies because you did your band thing.
Same thing, man. So 25,000 comic books. What's your favorite titles?
X-Men. I like the darker Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And I go for
like 70s Batman? Neil Adams or?
No, Frank Miller.
Frank Miller. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, Dark Knight era.
Yeah, Dark Knight era. Because that's what brought me back to Batman. It wasn't the, he did the first Batman, the second Batman.
Gotcha.
Which was pretty good. I mean, he did get the Dark City, but he made it more like a Batman animated series type of thing.
You're talking about the early days, like Bob Kane?
Michael Keaton.
Okay, yeah, the movies. Okay, right. Michael Keaton, right.
See, I'm familiar with Bob Kane and all those guys. When they first came out with Batman, he was a detective. He was way more serious than the 60s TV show, which I loved. Took on a more campy vibe for it, which kind of set the tone for a lot of DC comics, which set them back way
right.
back.
Right. Their comics match that feel of the show.
Exactly.
Wham, pow, bang.
So when you bring in Marvel, the underdog again, taking me back to my Rene Goulet days, I'm like, wow. And I got a taste of that X-Men, and it was a wrap for DC after that. Mm-hmm. I didn't even care about Justice League. If Super Friends came on TV, I wasn't watching it. It was all about Marvel Comics. Mm-hmm. I had the best thing right there in front of me, you know, not taking anything away from DC, because they did have some titles that I did. You know, my first comic ever was a Green Lantern comic. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yeah. That was the kind of those days when they were the two biggest ones.
Yeah, pretty much.
Fighting each other. Let me ask you this. I mean, with all the Marvel movies, especially the X-Men, have you ever had any auditions or any chance to do anything? Because I know you do a lot of acting as well.
One audition for Ant-Man. T, I got it. I wasn't mad, though, because I'm always rooting for my brothers to step up and step into that arena. But I did do Luke Cage.
Right.
And I had a blast doing that. And it's funny. It's a funny story because the writer of the show, who I hadn't seen in years, I defended him when one of our group mates punched him in the eye over some artwork that was done on an article he had wrote.
Are you talking about someone from Wu-Tang? Or?
Yeah, okay, one of our group members. And he wrote a great article in Rap Pages, but the artist used cartoon caricatures of us, and it wasn't too flattering. And dudes, at that point in time, you know, this Wu-Tang, this is our first year out, and, you know, we beating everybody up on the road. That's not a good look. So being green and not knowing how the business works, one of the group members took it out on the writer. The writer wasn't responsible for the artwork or putting the article out like that. That's the editor. So I defended him. And years later, turns out that he's the writer on Luke Cage, and he gave me a call and asked me to come through. And
you just never know, right?
You just never know. Cheo, yeah. Big up to you, brother.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This is Talk is Jericho.
Let's talk about the early days of Wu-Tang, because you're talking about rap music and stuff, and then obviously Run DMC, there's three guys and you know, Beasties and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
but rap's more of a almost a solo artist type of vibe, but Wu-Tang, the biggest band with the most members.
Yes, sir.
I mean, how did you figure that out? How'd you get that rolling?
I give all credit to RZA. RZA was the brains behind the whole Wu-Tang Asana, Wu-Tang, Credo, everything that we were living by those first 5 years. What had happened was GZA had a record deal and RZA had a record deal. GZA was with Cold Chillin' Warner Brothers. RZA was with Tommy Boy. For whatever reason, they didn't get the push that they deserved or needed at that point in time because there were upper echelon stars that were getting a bigger push. Big Daddy Kane's, Juice Crews, things of that nature.
What year is this? Early 90s?
Late 80s. There you go. Late 80s. Right. So when the opportunity came back around, now that he's gotten his feet wet and he's, you know, made a few friends in the industry and knows how these things go, he decided to do an album with just him, GZA, and Old Dirty Bastard. That was supposed to be Wu-Tang. And the joint Protect Your Neck that we did, our first single, was just supposed to be like a posse cut that you do with all your friends and everybody hops on one record. Turns out that RZA had an epiphany that night when we were all in the studio. He was like, why don't we just come in with all of us and record all of us on different records? I got material on all these dudes, because prior to that, we would go to his, instead of going to parties on Friday, we would go to RZA's house, make tapes, different songs, things like that. And he took all that material, put it all together, and made that album out of it. Now, for us, for me at least, it never seemed real. First 5 years into it, none of it seemed real. I was having way too much fun, wasn't paying attention to what was going on, and changed my life. I mean, when I finally looked up and assessed what was going on, we were multi-platinum working on our next album, living in a mansion in the Hollywood Hills. And I'm like, what the just happened, man? But it wasn't an easy journey. And this is what I think hinders artists today, because they come in first class flights. They coming in private jets, things like that. And they didn't experience the grind that, let's say, a Run DMC had in the beginning, where Russell was literally selling their records out the back of his trunk, going right up to radio stations. Here, play this. This is the new lick, things of that nature. And because I remember going from coach to first class. I remember going from two bedrooms with two beds in it to having my own suite. I remember that whole transition right there. And after I won my Grammy, forget about it. It was so, so different. Imagine when you fly in, you don't even have a ride from the airport to your hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you get to your hotel, there's no greeter there to greet you, and you're nominated for a Grammy. You get to the Grammys, they give you your Grammy pre-show.
Okay.
Before the show even starts. So I run the whole gauntlet, do all the interviews and all that stuff. And before the show even started, I was gone. But by the time I got back to my room, there was flowers everywhere. And the phone was ringing off the hook. We got this party we want you to go to. Then there's this party. Then you got to make an appearance here. And then you got to do this. And I'm like, wow.
And suddenly you made it. Yeah.
Suddenly I made it, for real. But it's a great film.
What did you get the Grammy for?
I got the Grammy for Best Rap Duo or Group with Mary J. Blige for the song You're All I Need to Get By.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I have it right here. Let me show you.
Let's check it out. Method is now getting up to grab his Grammy. Look at that. National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences, man, that's killer. 1995. Oh, shoot. I just spilled water. Sorry about that. I just spilled the water, kicked it over. Now he's got to get a towel. Jericho's a klutz. This is really cool, man. So this kind of...
Head to head, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this kind of took you to a different level, right?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Now, was that Mary's idea to do... Because it was your actually, song that she kind of did a sample of it in there, right?
It was... actually, the original was done by Tammy Terrell and Marvin Gaye, and was written by Nick Ashford and Valerie Simpson.
Ashford Simpson.
Yeah. Right. The reason why I know this is because they took 100% publishing. So I don't get a dime off that record. But it was a good look for them, giving me clearance and things of that nature. And the way we got Mary was, Leo wanted me to do the song. I said, no, y'all going to have to pay me to do the song. And eventually they paid me to do the song, and they brought in Puffy to get Mary, but Puffy had to do the remix. So he got me Mary on the song, and I had no idea that she was a fan already, because I've been like a fan of hers forever.
Mm-hmm.
And we met, and she was real cool. I mean, went in there, did what she had to do, and was gone. Yeah, and the next thing you know, it's history. Winning Grammys. And I can say I was her first Grammy win, so that's good.
That's pretty good to say. Yeah. Now, you're talking about Wu-Tang being from New York, kind of East Coast type of a thing.
Yeah.
And you go to the Hollywood Hills, L.A.
Yeah.
Was the East Coast, West Coast controversy or rivalry?
Yeah.
Was it as real as people made it out to be?
You know what? In our eyes, it wasn't. It was just like people in the know knew that it was this individual that had beef with this individual.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the media got it, it was coast against coast.
Coast to coast, right.
I feel like sometimes they have to categorize things for simple-minded people to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
So they generalized everything. And what they didn't know was that at the end of the day, these dudes that aren't on the radar, the dudes that aren't stars but roll with these entourages, are killers, murderers. You know, they from the block. These are street kids that have no empathy whatsoever. And basically they're sociopaths. So, I mean, my man doesn't like you, so I don't like you. You don't know my face, but I know yours because you're a public figure every day. So they kind of loaded, the media kind of loaded those guns with those bullets. Hmm. They didn't fire them, but they gave them the bullets to shoot. You know what I mean? And we were there. We were in Cali, the whole Wu-Tang. And this was, we were still, I think, promoting our first album because we were staying in the Oakwoods and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing Big 2 days before that.
Notorious?
Yeah.
Because
It was my birthday. Mm-hmm. And we were hanging out and there was the awards going on and stuff like that. And I remember he was on a cane because he had just gotten a car accident. Lil C's almost crippled him. And I'm not going to say that he wasn't, I mean, he was out and about. He wasn't hiding, but you can tell he was a little uncomfortable. Because usually when I hook up with Big, he would come directly to me. But this time, maybe it was his leg, who knows, but he sent C's. Yo, Big over here, he want to talk to you. Okay. Went over there, set what up to him, chopped it up with him for a little bit, and that was it. And next thing I know, I got a call from somebody in the Bad Boy camp. Can't remember. And it was like, they shot Big. And I was like, oh my God, no way. But I'm thinking in my head, he's going to be all right. He's going to be all right. Then the Harry passed. The thing that disgusted me the most was after he passed, because it was an award show going on, Soul Train Awards, most of the artists from the East Coast that were there left. I'm thinking to myself, like, y'all just played into what the media has been telling us all this time, and y'all in the know. Y'all know that it's not an East Coast, West Coast thing. Nobody's worried about y'all.
Mm.
This man just lost his life over something so dumb. We should have stood our ground and stayed in the West Coast to show that it's not an East Coast, West Coast beef. Not only that, but to show support for Biggie and his family.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so you're saying all the guys from the East moved back to
the East? A lot of the guys from the East that were out there for the awards left the next day without even attending the awards.
Oh, I see.
You know, everybody was shook, scared, whatever the hell you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Wu-Tang stayed out there, not because we were trying to be brave. We had work to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew in our heads that it wasn't an East Coast, West Coast thing because we were out in the clubs with these dudes every day.
Mm-hmm.
We never have security. That's not our thing. We are our own security.
Mm-hmm.
And it was never any drama whatsoever at all. It was one weird night. Somebody said in my ear like some craziness about, yo, Meth, because some girl did some craziness to me and I got really mad and I was steaming and some dude walked by me in the club and was like, what's good, Meth? He was a Crip. I'm like, nothing, man. This girl over here. He's like, that bitch. We got the heat up in here. And it didn't register to me at first, but I seen the handle. And I'm like, wait, no, we out of here. Got it.
Yeah.
No, fun,
we're not going to kill this girl.
No way. But this dude got a gun in the club.
Right.
I'm like, we get out of this club. You know what I'm saying? If he got a gun in, imagine who else got a gun in this motherfucker.
Right.
For real.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you mentioned with Big, why did he get, do we even know what happened? Why he got shot?
It was something that happened with Tupac. Basically, this story has been told over and over again. They say that it was Tupac felt like he was set up when he went to Quad Studios to record. Puffy and the family and all them happened to be there. And when Pac came through the lobby and was about to get on the elevator, dudes tried to Rob.
Hmm.
He reached and they tore his ass up. And at the end of the day, he's thinking to himself, because he's getting locked up now for some charge that he had prior to that, some rape charge thing or something like that. He's in jail and people are telling him, yo, they set you up. Now, when you in jail, you know, it's like people in jail know more than people on the street, you know, and they saying, well, these dudes set you up and this, that, and the third. And Pac did interviews and everything, igniting that, and all he ever said was bad boy this, bad boy that, and anybody that spoke up for bad boy, he spoke out against them. He didn't say F New York, he didn't say F the East Coast. He just spoke about those individuals. Then the Vibe article comes out while Pac is in jail, and they put Biggie and Puff on the cover. And it said, in bold letters, East versus West. That was it, right there. And, you know, I'm not going to point any fingers at Vibe because they've made leaps and bounds since then. You know, everyone learns from their mistakes. But that was a very big mistake, and I think it cost some people their lives, man. Wow. You know.
By starting that.
Right. And, I mean, there were conflicts between Bad Boy and Death Row at Soul Train Award shows and different events here and there. And, you know, certain people got shot and this one gets killed and, you know, it was just an ugly situation all around, man. That's why I've always, for my crew, being like in the forefront of the Wu-Tang, I've always said that I'm not just being safe for myself, I'm being safe for everybody. So I didn't hang out as much. I wasn't ever really a hangout type of dude anyway. I'm more internal than external.
Gotcha, yeah.
You know
what
I mean? Which is crazy because I'm hosting this show, so I got to be like, yeah.
Yeah.
But I would never create a problem where other people around me could get hurt. You have to think like that, especially when you're in the public eye like that.
You have influence.
Yes, exactly.
You know, with the size of your crew, you have influence.
And I learned a valuable lesson from that, how far that influence spreads, because we got two potential greatest of all time rappers gone for no reason.
And you worked with both, right? You worked with Big?
I worked with Big personally. I went in the studio and worked with Big. I had to sneak and do that because Wu-Tang didn't want me to do the record.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they didn't want me to do records with anybody. When you're a hot commodity and you're like the hottest dude at that point in time, because I was hot for a few months. I'll say a year. And everybody wanted to do records with me. But at that point in time, we were still striving to find who we were and to keep the money in the family. So by me spitting on other people's stuff, that's me sharing money with people we don't even do business with. But I went and did the record anyway, and you know, Big was always a cool dude with me. And as far as the Pac record, that was a record I did with the Dog Pound, because I was always cool with them and Snoop.
Snoop's guys, yeah.
Yeah, when they came to the East Coast, even when that beef was happening, I still hung out with these dudes because we knew what it was. And when Pac came home, Pac being the worker that he is, give me everything y'all got. Everybody wanted to contribute, so they were giving them all the records they had already had. California Love was supposed to be for Dre's next album.
Oh, okay.
He gave Tupac that record. The one that me and Redman are on, that was Dog Pound's record for their album. They gave it to Pac for his album, All Family Shit, and that's how that came about. But I actually did meet Pac after that, and this was when all that bullshit was going on, and I hadn't seen him the whole night in the club. I remember seeing Latifah. Puffy was there. A few other people were there. But when the lights came on and we were walking out, I felt a tap on my shoulder. Turn around, it was Tupac. Had on all black attire, seen the Death Row chain, no shirt on like he usually did. Who wears a suit with no shirt? Anyway, Shug was right there, shadowing him. All of a sudden, all these lights and cameras came on. And I'm just looking like, and I ain't gonna lie, I was high as shit. We had mushrooms that night. So I'm tripping off mushrooms. I'm seeing Tupac here. All kind of shit is running through my head, and he's telling me about a situation that happened in Vegas with the RZA. Now, RZA was in Vegas. Something happened with some gang member dudes, jumped him, took his chain. Pac was trying to tell me if he was there, that shit would have never happened. You know, we already got the chain back, blah, blah, blah. And if there's anybody we would fuck with, it would be Wu-Tang. That was the last thing I remember him saying. And I looked at him. I was like, yeah, you know, that's what men do. Love is love. And I broke out. I just wanted to get far away from that tension as possible. I'm not used to cameras in my face like that. And the whole night I was there was dark. No cameras. All of a sudden when I see Pop, all of a sudden all these cameras come on and shit. So we get out the club. We're talking about that night. I mean, we must have talked about it till like 5 in the morning. because we were on mushrooms, of course. But it was crazy. And later on, in hindsight, I think about it, it was like that was Pac reaching out, you know, extending a hand, right, saying this ain't no East Coast, West Coast thing. We fuck with y'all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Which is crazy
to see, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Did you ever have any kind of relationship with NWA? Because it's the same time frame. They're like the West Coast version of Wu-Tang in a way.
At that point, I had never met Dre. I hadn't met any of them. I remember meeting Ice Cube briefly in New York outside of Hot 97.
Mm.
I forgot what he said to me, but I've always been a fan of Ice Cube's. And he won't put me in any of his movies. And then I met Eazy-E.
Mm-hmm.
93 The Beat, I think that was the name of it. 92.3 The Beat in Cali. He had a show, and me and Redman went through the promote, and I remember he gave me this joint wrapped in licorice paper. First time I ever had licorice paper. And it was that Chronic too. Ooh, Eazy-E. And I was like, I'm gonna hold on to this shit, because it's from Eazy-E. Eazy motherfucking E. And I think like 6 months after that he died.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. But I got to meet the man before he passed.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
What's the dynamic of being in Wu-Tang when there's 8 guys or 9?
9.
9 guys.
Well, 10 now.
10 now, right?
Yeah.
How do you do that? I mean, that's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, right?
You know what? I ain't gonna lie. The first album, we were all hungry, and you know, everything was fresh and new. Dudes were anxious to get in the booth and rhyme and all that stuff. Even anxious to do the shows, and we were getting, at the end of the night, we would get like $35 a piece, but dudes wanted they $35. And then when it moved up to 100, I wouldn't want to be the manager that night, those nights, man, because we was on them like, where's my 100? I want my 100 right now. You're talking about 8-9 individuals. But the studio time was always the time for us to click that brotherhood, learn who we are, learn about each other, and just be a group, what a group is meant to be. You know what I'm saying? Courteous to each other, all that shit. I love that first album. But the second album comes around, and we're talking about four different solo albums prior to the second album coming out. So now you got a bunch of solo artists who have been on the road grinding as solo artists, trying to come back as a group and make songs as a group. The cohesion wasn't all there. There were a few people that were still focused. Ghostface, I like Ray on there. Deck, of course. I wasn't focused at all. I was had my head so far up my own ass. I'm telling him, flying first class now. I got a Grammy. I'm like, Method Man, Big Man, pow, pop my collar, all that shit. So I didn't spend as much time in the studio as I should have, and the critics called me out on it.
Mm.
And that, for me, was like major, because it was like they're really listening. Oh, shit. And you can't be one of the hottest or in the forefront of a group and not come with it.
Because
now you lack it. Now that opens the door for them to pick and choose other members to put in the forefront ahead of you. So for me, that was a learning experience right there. And it just didn't feel the same as it felt when we first started recording. It just felt inorganic. It just felt pushed, like, we have to do this. It wasn't because we wanted to, it was because we had to, which wasn't good.
Right. And plus, like you said, if you've got solo artists and maybe your album sold more than his,
yes,
and his album sold more than his, so I'm sure the egos kind of get a little bit out of whack.
A little, you know what? But dudes is crazy because nobody wants to show it, but their actions speak louder than their words.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to lie, my single, All I Need, and the album went platinum. The single went platinum before the album did. But both of those went platinum before the Wu-Tang first album did. And yes, I was riding a high horse. And yes, I mean, I never felt any jealousy, but you can tell that dudes weren't as happy for me as I was for myself. Real talk. But it wasn't any jealousy
at all.
Real shit.
Let's talk about the names. Where did Wu-Tang come from? Where did Method Man come from?
Well, you know, Wu-Tang came from the movies. RZA, he must have gave that name to like three different groups, man. I remember me and Ugart was Wu-Tang. He let us have the name. Then it was him and Ghost and Dudes and Stapleton. They was Wu-Tang. And then, like I said, the original Wu-Tang was supposed to be Old Dirty, GZA, and RZA. We were just add-ons.
Mm-hmm.
So he got it from the karate movies. He had the whole idea set where he would, you know, follow the culture of those masters, the culture of Tai Chi, the culture of the monks.
Sure, the Shaolin monks.
The whole Shaolin thing. And it worked. It definitely worked. And as far as individual names, these were names that we had on the block already, you know. Method was supposed to be Weed, and where I hustled at was in front of the Weed Gate. And I had an uncanny knack for knowing who was coming to get weed and who was coming to get something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I just took the name Method Man and I made a song about it. Once you make a song about something and you say that's your name, that's your name. And I wrote Method Man, I was like 17, 18 when I wrote that shit and didn't record it. Well, I had recorded it. It was already a song, but we re-recorded it for the album when I was 22. And it was still bumping. I was a hood celebrity before anything else.
Ah, they knew
that's
you on the street.
That's where it starts. Yes, that's where it starts.
So Method is weed.
Yes.
It's a street term for weed.
A street term for weed.
Oh, you're the weed man.
Yes, sir.
I remember when I was found out what Ghostface Killer meant. A ghost.
Oh,
I was like,
yeah.
Oh, white guy killer.
That's good. I didn't know it meant that myself. That's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
I didn't get that one at first.
Somebody just told me what Tikal mean because that was the name of my album.
Right.
Tikal, right? And that's what we used to call weed. And that's what I met Tikal method. Somebody said, take into consideration all lives.
Hmm.
And I was like, you know what? That's kind of me.
That
shit.
Fits too.
That fits.
Yeah,
take into consideration all lives. And Chef, Raekwon the Chef, Chef is an acronym for criminals have to eat food.
The inside story,
there
folks.
There you go.
Let's talk about your solo records, though. You've had some huge successes, but there's been, you almost got the Guns N' Roses Chinese Democracy with Crystal Meth. It's like, it's been 8 years or so, right?
Yeah. You know what? With the Crystal Meth album, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it. It's going to come. I mean, I did the Meth Lab joint as a precursor to that album, but I'm more trying to get a push on some of this younger talent in Staten Island that no one's reaching for right now. You know what I'm saying? And if I can be a springboard to get them there, so be it. I'll rhyme on every track if I have to. My first album, when I did it, there was a flood. So RZA couldn't, he lost a lot of the data and shit. So I had to do a lot of that shit over. He had to remake beats over, shit like that. And it was a grind because we were actually on the road promoting the first album, but Def Jam wanted a different album.
Hmm.
So we went up, when we would wake up that morning, we would promote, go to the radio, make an appearance somewhere, autograph signing. Then that night we would have to promote at a club or perform at a club. And after the show, which would be like 1-2 in the morning, everybody else would go back to their rooms and rest. I would go to the studio with RZA to record. And it was a long grind, but it paid off in the end. I got a platinum plaque out of it. But then that second album was coming. We asked for more money, of course. And I was riding a high horse coming off a Grammy win. And I remember myself and Mariah were dropping the same week. And I think Mariah kicked my ass that first week. But I wasn't a slouch because I came in with 407,000.
That's amazing, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
huge.
Holy shit. And the album wasn't that good. The album was not that good. And that went on to sell double.
Of what the first one did?
The second.
The second.
The
one
first
did.
One went platinum,
right.
And with a platinum single, and which is unheard of now.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one went double platinum.
Double platinum, right.
Yeah, doble. And then that third album came, and I was so unfocused. I'm wondering if people still like me. You know, you start to become your own worst enemy and getting in your own way. I remember hearing Randy Orton say that. That's what Triple H told him one day.
Mm-hmm.
Look, brother, you're a great wrestler. You're a talent. You're getting in your own way.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And he had
yeah.
to do a total 180. He's still shitting in gym bags and shit. Randy, what the hell? But you can tell that 180 turn
mm-hmm.
helped him out a lot. Apex Predator, baby. For
that's
real.
The truth. That's
yes,
the truth.
Yes.
But you, sometimes, like you said, you can start believing your own hype.
Yep.
That's where the problems start.
Yep. When you should always, humility should always be first
mm-hmm.
when you wake up and you look in that mirror. Humble yourself right there.
Mm.
Then when you go out in the world, it'll reflect on everybody else and shit.
It's amazing what you see when you get older.
Yeah.
You know? No problem. It's so easy. Yeah, you make things so hard when you're a younger guy.
That's why I bless kids, because they force me to mature. I didn't mature until I was 40 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm 46 now. You know what I mean? I'm actually saving money. For real. So, God, blessings, man. That's why this is my solace. This is my fortress of solitude, so to speak, like
your
Superman
house.
Has. Yes. Yeah, yeah. And people that know me and know, I've been in Staten Island for over 30 years, so I pretty much know the whole island. And people that know me will tell you, Meth is the same way he was when he was Dirty Shotgun on the block. Same way he is today, you know, humble. And I just love life. My freaking neighbor next door loves me. It's my man.
Are you a good neighbor?
Yeah, Doug is dope. He does my snow sometimes for me. We're talking, this dude is gotta be early 80s.
Wow.
Yeah, he was a fireman though, so his chest is huge. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He's a good guy. I can't wait to do a talk show so I can shout him out.
Did you guys do a lot of, shout out to Doug right now.
Yeah.
Did you guys do a lot of touring with Wu-Tang and on your own solo wise?
Oh my God. Sometimes, you know what? The touring got so bad that sometimes I had other things I had to do. And this was a big problem for Wu-Tang, because people would come to these shows expecting to see all eight of us, and sometimes you got six.
Oh, really?
Sometimes you got four. When you got four, you were pissed. I paid for eight individuals. I didn't come here for four individuals.
Right.
One thing that I tried to do was make every show, and almost killed myself doing that shit. And at the end of the day, the fans were so loyal that we had to come up with the saying that whether you get one or two, three or four, it's still Wu-Tang forevermore. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, people knowing that, we have walk-up numbers. For people out there that don't know what walk-up numbers is, when you put the tickets out there to sell, people will buy the tickets. There's people that wait until the day of and want to see the group actually enter the building before they buy their ticket at the door. That's walk-up money. Yeah.
So you guys would do tours where not everybody was even confirmed.
Yep, all the time. And that had a lot to do with bullshit management. I said it.
Yeah.
Wu-Tang management was, oh God, they couldn't even keep up with the numbers. But we're talking about dudes we grew up with.
Right.
And we're talking about RZA's older brother in a management role.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I worked at the Statue of Liberty with this brother. They never promoted him to fucking assistant manager, let alone manager. I ain't taking nothing away from Vine, though. He worked with what he had and shit, and he did a okay job with it. Okay,
but that just seems so crazy to be like, you know, like Slipknot, but only four guys show up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, the fans would go bonkers.
How could you even do your gig if, like, let's say there's a song that has eight guys on it, but there's only four? Do you have to double up and do other guys' parts? And
the power of fans. If they love you that much, at the end of the day, if you're throwing on a hit record, you can ask them to sing it for you if the group member isn't there. When I don't make shows, they still do the Method Man record, and the fans sing it, so kudos, man.
Right.
I love our fans. Killer Bees.
Killer Bees, baby. Let's talk a little bit about Old Dirty Bastard, passed away.
Yep.
How important was he to the band? What kind of a guy was he?
Dirty was the one that gave us our soul,
because
he had a lot of soul in him. Another dude grew up in a musical household, you could tell. He would rather sing than rhyme any day, even though he couldn't say. But he was like that drunk uncle that be at every barbecue. Hold up, y'all don't know nothing about this. Let me tell you how this go. And Dirty gave us our soul, man. And he had a flow, a cadence, unlike any other rap artist that's ever come before him, because it would go from rhyming to song in a heartbeat. And he would never say the rhyme the same way. At all. Even when he performed it, he would never say it the same way. Kind of like going to a Lauryn Hill concert. When she performs those records that you love, she doesn't do them like that. You know, she does them, this is a show now, we're going to do it like the show do it, you know. It's like Amazing Grace. When you go to a play, they sing Amazing Grace a certain way. It may be up tempo. You go to church, Amazing Grace is a ballad. You know, that's another thing. Let me just touch on this. I hate when they turn the national anthem into a ballad. First of all, God bless America, by all means, right? But I'm there for the game.
Right.
I want to see the game. You know, I want to see the fight. And sometimes when you watch a boxing match, if somebody's from another country, you got to sit through their national anthem. And don't let it be Canada, because y'all national anthem is long as shit. Oh, Canada. But that's one of my favorite places to perform.
Is it really?
Yes, because it's not exactly overseas. I mean, totally different country. But you can still get a lot of the shit that you get here. Mm-hmm. In Canada. Mm-hmm. Toronto is just like a mini New York.
Oh, absolutely.
My God. The T-Dot.
Well, it's a different country, but it's basically the same country.
Basically.
You know, the same thing.
Yeah.
When did you find
out? A lot less racism. A whole lot less.
Yes, Canada. There's not a lot in Canada.
Right.
You know?
Yes, sir. But, you know, you have French Canadians that hate on regular Canadians because they're not
English Canadians.
French.
Right. That's right. Yeah. That's a whole world there too. That's a whole world there, too. So was it hard to replace ODB after he passed away?
There was no replacement for him. We could never do that. It was harder dealing. I mean, he never really made shows. So, you know, whatever. But it was hard dealing with losing someone that close to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if you lost a sibling or if you lost an arm or leg.
Right.
It just, you know, there's still points and times, because we do his dedication every night, points and times when we do that dedication on stage, and I gotta keep my composure from not, you know, crying on stage. It doesn't work all the time, but that's just the impact that he had on all of our lives, not just the world, but on the group members' lives and stuff.
What did he pass away from?
Overdose.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
He lived that lifestyle. You know, I mean, a lot of artists have went the same way. And I'm pretty sure if they could come back, they would grab someone and tell them, stop it right now. Because he didn't have to go that way.
Do you find that things have changed over the last few years as far as that? I know in wrestling it sure has, whereas, you know, I lost a lot of friends from that sort of stuff. But it's changed now. Is it like that from what you see?
No, I think it's worse. I mean, they're drinking lean. Lean, that shit gives you seizures.
What's lean?
Lean is codeine.
Oh, wow.
Or promethazine.
Mm.
And they mix it with Sprite and put all these Jolly Ranchers and shit in it, and they're drinking this shit, and it's giving them seizures.
You know what I'm saying?
Personally, I myself, the most I went outside of marijuana was angel dust.
Mm.
And that shit is a whole nother trip.
Wow.
If I could advise anybody, tap them on the shoulder, be like, don't smoke it. Mm. Shit is horrible. Horrible.
Is it hallucinogenic? Angel dust?
It can be.
Yeah.
It can be. And then we would take mescalines. But we're talking 13, 14-year-olds running around like madmen. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I would recommend nobody f*** with shit like that. Marijuana, on the other hand, you play, you pay. You know? This is just my thing.
How close are we to having marijuana just legalized across the whole country?
I think we're very close. But you know what? There's a lot of old fogies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you guys have them in wrestling too, that just won't let some of these new guys just let them over. It's like, no, I'm Ric Flair and it's not gonna happen. No slight at Ric Flair. Yeah. Woo, love Rick. His daughter's doing well too.
She is.
It's just that old regimen just won't come up off their high horses. They're still watching, you know, that
Reefer
marijuana
Madness.
Reefer Madness. There you go. They're still
I'm
on the Reefer Madness.
On the weed.
It's like, there's so many healing qualities to it, which I won't get into because I'm no scientist. I just like the way it feels. I just, you know, it inspires me to do things that, or go to the next level. I'm not asking anybody else to smoke, but for me, it works. It just works. And I think it's, out of all the drugs that are legal, it's more harmless than some of those drugs that they're legalizing, that they're giving people on a regular basis.
Sure.
You have guys coming home with PTSD from overseas, war and things of that nature, and they're saying, I don't like taking the drugs because they make me feel crazy. I'm loopy. I don't like the way it makes me feel. I'm not saying that some of these guys can be suicidal or harmful to people around them, but they're blaming the drugs off top. Mm-hmm. And when they go towards the marijuana side of it, and that high doesn't have them with the strange side effects and things of that nature, it's like, oh, okay, I prefer this.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get caught and locked up for it. And they're treating you like you just bought heroin.
Sure. Like you got a pound of cocaine on you or something.
It's incredible, because the majority of drug offenders that are locked up are marijuana users. You know? And at the end of the day, drug offenders need help, not jail.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They, if anything, instead of putting
all this money into jails. Let's do, and they've tried this, I mean, to programs to rehab these people so they can find themselves back in society and do what it is that you know, whatever benefits them and gets them to the American dream. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, even with hip-hop, it's always a I, me type of mentality. Even when you listen to the rhymes, it's I, me. Look what I did. Look what I got. Look what I wear. Look what I have type of mentality. That's why Kendrick can come in and sweep kick and Hurricane Rana the game. You know what I'm saying? Like, because he came from a whole different angle. Not only is the kid a poet, but he's sort of like an activist. Right. You know what I mean? For whatever culture he's standing up for, which could be, I mean, it could be black hippie culture or whatever, you know, but he has a voice and a message behind it. Mm-hmm. It's not just I, me. He kind of makes you feel like you're on that journey with him. And that's what a true artist does.
Do you like modern hip hop?
Some of it. Mm-hmm. I think the dudes are, they're making songs, and I can appreciate that. They're making songs. As far as lyrical content, you're not always going to get that. Mm-hmm. So when there is someone like an Eminem that comes around, it's a breath of fresh air. Mm. Yes, sir.
Is he one of the best rhymers? Who's the best rhymer?
I couldn't even tell you, because there's always somebody that, like I said, I deal with the underground dudes, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a few guys that's underground that I feel like should be top five. Vince Staples, I'm looking at you, brother. So I can't put a number on it, but if you're talking about the older guard, whew, they always have Jay and Nas up there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for good reason. Those dudes are dope. Then you get the Tupacs and the Biggies in there. Good reason. They had a great following. Pac was a prophet. Biggie, I mean, who could fuck with his cadence as far, and his wordplay? He was dope. Mm-hmm. Telling stories, whatever. The thing that grinds my gears is the fact that all of these lists have those names on them. When there were dudes out there that came from that same era, just didn't have the same kind of push, that were way more prolific mm-hmm. than some of those names, man. So
that's always the way that whatever the press and the media decides, this is the guy.
Right, exactly. Right. Exactly.
Just as we wind down a bit, I know that you are a big wrestling fan. We talked about that earlier. You watch the show now? You watch it?
I haven't had time. No. Right. I can't catch it, but it is on my DVR. Raw tapes every Monday. Yeah, all 3 hours of it. Thanks, Vince.
Who are some of your all-time favorites throughout the course of your fandom?
Rene Goulet.
Yeah, you love Rene.
Yeah, Cowboy Bob and Roddy.
Okay, yeah.
Roddy was my top. He just, for some reason, his promos... And Piper's Pit was just, you know, the older guard, Pat Patterson. I used to love Ivan Putski.
Wow, Polish, so you go power. All the way back, man, yeah.
Yeah. Tony Atlas, Rock's father.
Rocky Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Chief
J. Strongbow.
Chief J. Strongbow. Stan Stasiak. Oh. I used to like Adrian Adonis.
Yeah.
I used to love Adrian Adonis. But I remember it was a North-South connection before he did the other thing with the, you know, the whole
gay thing, right.
He had a partner, and it was like a North-South connection. I forgot who it was.
No, dude, it was the East-West connection.
East-West connection.
It was Jesse the Body Ventura.
Yeah, and Jesse the Body Ventura. We all know, you know, that he was biting superstar Billy Graham's whole thing, but he did it so well.
Yeah, he was so great.
Oh, my God. And when The Rock came around, I was there. I saw that whole run.
That was,
from the time he went to The Nation and just said, "Get you people."
Who did you do the theme song for? You did somebody.
I did one for Kane, which never got aired, and one for The Rock.
Yeah, you did The Rock. Yeah, I remember.
And then I caught this guy. Just incredible, man. I started watching ECW, and this dude would just come in, the bravado and just the swagger and the hair. Chris Jericho. And he would do the Lion Song. Oh, you was in there getting your ass kicked in there, boy. But you was kicking ass, too, and taking numbers, baby.
Yeah.
Taking numbers. And I remember they had did this promo, I think, for like 2-3 months. You know, you're opening.
The countdown, yeah.
Yes. And when you finally came out, we went fucking crazy. Like, yeah, you about to see some fucking shit now, baby. And sure enough, Chris, you did not disappoint, brother.
Man.
From promo to being in the ring, giving your all, to being the unified champion, the first unified champion. It can only be one. It can only be one, and you deserved every bit of it.
Hype man, you gotta be my hype man,
brother. You deserved every bit of it because you put your work in. You definitely put your work in. That makes me think of people like Miz. Right now, Miz, Mark Henry used to tell me all the stories. They put that dude through hell.
They did.
Whooped his ass.
Well, because we didn't know if he was legit or not, because he came in through real world.
Exactly, yeah.
So, you know, does he want to play a wrestler? Does he really want to do this? And, of course, he really did, but you never know that at first.
Yeah, so you got to test his.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when you got people like Undertaker walking around and shit, you know what I mean? And, and he's real serious, Mark.
Yeah.
He's real serious about his shit. Like, he doesn't play no bullshit. I get that, man. The guy that sticks out to me, Polynesian dude, and everybody has stories about this dude, man. He just was a real ass kicker in real life.
Haku. Yeah.
Yeah. Are those stories true?
True story, but just the sweetest guy. Like, I'm sure you know a lot of Samoan guys.
Yes.
They're all the friendliest, nicest guys.
Yeah.
Put a little alcohol in the system, they turn into killers.
Batty.
Yeah, they turn into killers. So a lot of those stories, I just had him on this podcast a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And he's super humble, the friendliest guy. But yeah, they're true.
A little sauce.
Through plate glass windows and biting noses off.
What did you think of New Jack? And that dude is...
Yeah, well, I knew him when he came into Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
Okay.
So that was before he was even in ECW.
Wow.
So this, you're talking about being in like Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And you got two black dudes coming in there literally eating watermelon and fried chicken.
Yeah.
And playing right into that. I mean,
old,
you know,
stereo,
There's a lot of, you know, cross burners down there and wearing the white coats.
Yeah,
this is the Dirty South,
balls,
right?
Balls.
So they were going for that type of heat. A little bit uncomfortable at times, but Jerome is his name. He would go for it, man.
Yeah,
he would go for it.
He's got some stories, and I've heard some stories about that motherfucker. And I've seen footage where he just loses it on people.
Well, just from diving off balconies and cutting guys. And he definitely was a gangster, for sure.
Oof.
Did you ever get a chance to meet any of those guys, like Piper or anybody like that?
I went backstage, because I was on the Hard Knock Life tour. I went backstage and met a lot of the ECW wrestlers. That was the first time I seen Sabu talk. Freaked me out.
Yeah.
But it was a mess back then.
Yeah.
Nothing like WWE, which I expected. I mean, it's a Paul Heyman promotion and shit.
But smaller, too.
They were grinding and shit.
Yeah.
And I remember the locker room was just one big room.
That's it.
Everybody was in.
Yeah.
And, a lot of guys with bloody balls was there.
Uh-huh.
I remember seeing balls because I was big on balls. Like, that's my G. I think God is hardcore. Yeah. And, then when I got to go to a WWE event, I brought my nephews. It was SummerSlam. They got it on the WWE Network. They showed me. I was like, And I got to meet Kane. Was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Kane was very nice. He came out and met the guys.
Very smart.
I seen H. And H seen us, but H was farther down the hall. And I get it. You know, sometimes you just drained and you don't want to be bothered. He did was gone.
Triple H?
Yeah,
he
gone.
Got out of Dodge, yeah.
Farouk,
mm-hmm.
You know, Ron came out. He was nice to the boys and shit.
Yeah.
We didn't get to see any DX because, you know, they were riding their high horse at that time. They were fucking rock stars
too,
boy.
That's
word. But the guy that stood out the most to me that I got to chop it up with, he came and actually sat down with us and chopped it up with Randy, Batista, Dave, good guy.
Yeah, he was in his movie, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. And me and my boy was walking down the hallway and Rick was talking to somebody. He was beefing and he's like, ask these guys who I am. Who am I? We're like, you're Ric Flair. He said, woo, Ric Flair, woo. I love that guy, man.
Somebody's probably asking him for a security pass or something.
And that's all my cousin used to talk about was Ric Flair. And I wasn't familiar with Rick because I didn't come up on NWA.
Sure.
It was always WWF or WWE or whatever it is now. But I was intrigued with him. And Inoki. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Inoki?
Inoki,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
Inoki.
Japanese guy, yeah.
Yeah. But I was always like, well, who's Ric Flair? Well, who the hell is Ric Flair? And then I actually got to see the guy cut a promo. I hadn't seen him wrestle at all, but I seen him cut a promo, and I was like, yeah, that dude's larger than life. The feather dude and that. Oh, come on,
the blonde
Rick.
Hair.
Come on, Rick.
Last few questions. What's your favorite match that you ever saw?
Oh, fuck.
Is the one that stands out for you?
The match that stands out for me? So many. You know what? I'm gonna go with ECW. I think it was Taz was wrestling Bam Bam Bigelow, and they went through the ring.
Yeah,
I was like, oh my God, I've never seen nothing.
Yeah, you suplexed him through the ring.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Taz was the human suplex machine. When I played, because I got WWE 2000, and I create my character, he uses nothing but suplexes. The whole shit, nothing but suplex. Tigerplex, every plex you can think of, he's doing that shit. But that match stood out for me because I had never seen anything like that.
Right.
And guess what happened the next week?
What was that?
WWF did it. They did the same exact thing, except they wound up on it because the whole ring collapsed.
That's when Big Show and Brock, I think, suplexed them or something.
Right.
They're not going to be outdone.
The Great Khali, sweet guy. I could tell he's a sweet guy. Probably gets along with everybody. Horrible wrestler. I'm sorry. I just have to put that.
He can hardly walk, so that's not a surprise. He's such a spectacle, though. When you see him walk by, it's like everyone's looking at him.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So, will there be more Wu-Tang stuff coming up?
Possibly. Yeah. I mean, dudes are planning to. Well, they're working on getting a residency in Vegas, which would be dope.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There's always going to be touring with Wu-Tang. You just may not get everybody on the tour. As far as albums, not sure. That's up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've got very loyal fans, so you never know. And I can always say, at the end of the day, if they do decide to do one, I'll sign on. Not a problem whatsoever.
What's your favorite Wu-Tang song?
Cream, because that's what did it for us. That got us where we needed to be, man. That song was just so, dare I say, powerful, because it kind of bridge gaps between us being street kids and that mainstream,
right?
And we didn't do anything to compromise to get there. So Cream,
never compromise, man.
Yeah, never ever.
Thank you so much, my man, inviting me to your beautiful house.
Thank you,
having
brother.
This chat.
This was major for me. I got Chris Jericho in my house.
I'm so glad that we met. Word, you never know, right?
My friends are better than yours. Remember that shit.
All right, the new Celebrity Battle Rap show, Drop the Mic, premieres this Tuesday, May 2nd on TBS at 10 p.m., 9 Central. Method Man and Haley Baldwin co-host the show. And in the, I think it's the premiere episode, you're going to see me versus Layla Ali in an upcoming episode. I think it's the premiere. Like I said, it was a blast to do. Hilarious to watch. So check it out this Tuesday on TBS, Jericho versus Ali. Geez, I've been doing a lot of the shows that they just did Tanked last week in Animal Planet. Check that out and check out the Tanked is Jericho podcast with Brett Raymer and Wade King. Great dudes. They did a great job with my fish tank, although it looks like one of the fish is eating another one right now, those vicious little bastards. But thank you so much for checking it out, and thank you for checking out Drop the Mic this Tuesday, May 2nd. And don't forget, May 3rd is the debut of Judas by Fozzy right here on Talk is Jericho. And in the meantime, before we wrap things up on a lighter note, let's see what Mundy, Truly, and Clint from Team Tiger Awesome have cooked up for today. Hit it, boys.
This is the news with Team Tiger Awesome. Scientists revealed last week Saturn's moon Encladus is home to liquid water and chemical energy, raising the moon's potential for supporting life from nope to icy all the way to I bet rich folks have already bought the coolest places. Also discovered on Encladus were the basic necessities of life: carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, a Netflix subscription, and two Starbucks in locations of differing convenience. And finally, in the world of podcasting, a local comedy news writer only found one story he felt like making fun of this week. Authorities are warning listeners the third segment of the news will be too meta. For more dangerously useful news, listen to the Team Tiger Awesome Show every Sunday on Podcast One, right here on the Jericho Network.
If you always want to be caught up on the most important news headlines of the week or the total BS headlines, you need to subscribe to Team Tiger Awesome Show at Apple Podcasts. Start your week with a laugh. New episodes every Sunday. Be sure to leave them a 5-star rating and review, and do that for all the Jericho Network podcasts. 5-star ratings and reviews. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. Beyond the Darkness 5 days a week. Rock Talk with Mitch LaFont. Great episode this week. talking to the forgotten guitar players that played with Ozzy Osbourne. Ozzy's forgotten guitar players, Brad Gillis, Bernie Torme. Mitch has got some quality guests every week. Check out that show if you like rock and roll, talking to the two forgotten Ozzy Osbourne guitar players. And then there's the Raven Effect. Raven goes into depth about his early years in wrestling, training at the Monster Factory, working in Portland for Don Owens, and working in Memphis for Jerry Lawler. Who does he think is the absolute greatest worker of all time? He will tell you on the Raven Effect this week with his co-host Busby Berkeley. And of course, our flagship show, Keeping It 100 with Conan, always bringing in the big ratings and always bringing in the swagger. So please go check it out. Do it for your favorite shows and do it for Talk is Jericho as well. Go give me ratings and reviews. I want 2,000 reviews on my iTunes account, so go do it now. One last thank you to this episode's tremendous sponsors and to all of you for supporting them. DDP Yoga, go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to get 20% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDP Yoga related merch. The Books, sign up at books.com. Use my promo code Jericho to get 20% off your order and free weekday shipping. That's BOUQS.com. NatureBox, go to naturebox.com/Jericho to get 50% off your first order. And of course, True Car. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next and this Wednesday, May 3rd. Judas by Fozzy, and wow, Kiefer Sutherland is going to be here, man. He's currently starring in the TV show Designated Survivor, but you also know him as Jack Bauer from 24, Stand By Me, The Lost Boys, Flatliners. He's also a great musician. He hung out with Bon Jovi, Young Guns, 1-2, movie and music, all of it here, movies and music with Kiefer Sutherland on Wednesday. Don't miss it. Wow, that's an A-level guest. Talk about A-level guests. Method Man and Kiefer Sutherland and Samoa Joe. I mean, that is insane in the membrane. I'm telling you, I got a whole lot of other big time guests coming up for you. A whole lot of shaking going on. And next week, Kiefer Sutherland. And then I've got, I've got a multiple former WWE world champion and one of the hottest new movie stars in the world today. And you will find that out on Wednesday. But for now, this Wednesday, Kiefer Sutherland's going to be here. Stay hard, stay cool, stay hungry. And in the meantime and in between time, give yourself a big yeah, boy. Be safe, guys. We'll see you soon.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.